Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. That's terrible. That is terrible. Let me have a quick look at some of the other entries that I had. Duhast Hemingway said, submitted this one for an idea for an opening line. Welcome back to the Hemingway List, where aspiring writers come to learn every day. Yeah, that's nice. I like that. Today we will be discussing Chapter 5 and then reading Chapter 6. These are the questions that I asked the community. The Swede now seems downright nasty. What is up with this guy? Do you want them to fight? Would you rather they work it out all civil-like? And lastly, which actors would you cast to play the characters in the Blue Hotel? That was following on from yesterday's discussion where we talked about that. I wanted to hear some more casts. Pretty bad discussion prompts on yesterday's chapter by me. I think I was just a bit uninspired to think of questions. But hopefully the discussion didn't suffer for that. Spargirl Jen said, I'm a chapter behind. I'll be caught up tonight. But we are dining right now at a place called the Hemingway Lounge and Bar in Cozumel. And I thought of you all. Cheers. Bon Appetit, says Techrific. I need to see where Cozumel is. Cozumel is an island in Mexico. Oh, wow. It looks like basically heaven. If you type in Cozumel and hit images in Google, yeah, I think that's pretty much heaven. Tropical blue water, palm trees. Oh, okay, I can't look at that anymore. It's making me very jealous. Spargirl Jen, I envy you. I wish I was at the Hemingway Lounge and Bar right now. Hey, here's an idea, Spargirl Jen. I don't know if you listen to the podcast. Actually, I'm going to type this in as well. Can you please get a photo of the bar? We want to see that, Spargirl Jen. I want to see this Hemingway Lounge and Bar in Cozumel. Hey, thanks for letting us know. I love little tidbits like that. Discussion that's not necessarily about the chapter, but just kind of bringing the community together. Thanks for thinking of us. Techrific said his cast was this. Scully is Ben Kingsley, as he was in Hugo. Okay, yep. Quite a severe character. Johnny is Oliver Reed in Oliver Twist. Okay. The Swede, Tom Hardy from Taboo. The cowboy, Sam Elliott in Tombstone. And the Easterner, Edward Hardwick in Oliver Twist. Okay, very cool. And I appreciate, I don't know if you could hear me clicking away in the background, but I appreciate, Techrific, that you linked each of those names to a picture of that character, because I don't know who most of those are. Swim said the Mama Fishy said, I don't know why the Swede now seems so nasty. Maybe he's a mean drunk. That could be all there is to it. Swim said the Mama Fishy also said they kind of have to fight to keep the story moving forward. Yeah, it does make for a better story, doesn't it? If they have a bit of fisticuffs. I kind of meant more like if you were there in the Blue Hotel, would you want them to have a fight? And lastly, regarding the cast of characters, Swim said the Mama Fishy said this story should be a Quentin Tarantino film, so I'll let him cast it. Oh, and after watching the Coen Brothers' Western Anthology, I'd like to see what they would do. That's the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, isn't it? Yeah, that was really cool. I watched that too. It does have a very Coen Brothers feel about it. Gravel on Mud said, this is off topic. Awesome. But earlier, was there any significance to the cowboy declaring that the Swede was a Dutchman? Also, just wanted to say that I enjoyed that moment when the characters were gazing up with their silly eyes at the war above them. One, the drink and a lack of proper psychiatric care, I reckon, is to blame for the Swedes' nasty attitude. Two, them fighting is inevitable. And three, I'd like to see the Coen brothers direct it, Sam Elliott as the cowboy, Jack Elam as the Swede, and not sure about the rest of them. JMama8779 said, glad to see another person thinking of Sam Elliott for this role. Never thought of Jack Elam for the Swede, but I did picture Sam Rockwell in the role simply because he's so damn good at making the viewer uncomfortable. Didn't think we'd get a proper fight in this story, but I can't say I'm upset. Let's get ready to rumble. Indeed. Reddit user 14843759283 said, I was thinking about that strange remark as well. It might be just a way to show that the Swede is somewhat untrustworthy, paranoid of others, or simply a bizarre person. It would certainly appear really strange, I think, if someone claimed they were a Swede when they weren't, for no apparent reason. In any case, I think the passage's purpose is to add more to the Swede's personality and intensify the tension between him and the others. I think there is a bit of an explanation in the story itself, where they say something like, basically, anyone from overseas, they basically call a Swede if they're from anywhere around that region. So that it was kind of like, I don't know, in the same way as a lot of Asian people get called Chinese when they're not. I think it was just showing that the Americans in this time were a bit naive about people from that area of the world. What do you call that area of the world? There's a name for that place. Geography is really not my strong suit. You know what I mean, though. Arvip said, I'd like to see them fight because they seem to hate each other so much. Their glances crossed like blades. The Swede doesn't seem to have any other takers. He gets no pushback from the others. Scully is smacked on his sore shoulder and lets it go. The Easterner almost gets harpooned by a fork and does nothing, of course. What else would one expect from the Easterner? And the cowboy seems in a daze, doesn't seem himself. Allows the Swede to take over his previous habit of board whacking. And I really think the cowboy could take this guy, the Swede. I mean, one great push sent the Swede staggering back. But someone has to fight this guy. Who better than Johnny, who may or may not be a low-down, good-for-nothing cheater? Marigold the Fields said, the Swede has been weird since the beginning. He laughs for no reason. Assumes he'll be murdered because people get pissed at him, and accuses Johnny of cheating at cards out of the blue. All of his actions so far have done nothing but piss everyone off, and he seems to have a habit of trying to play the victim. He might be trying to run some sort of a scam on the hotel, or maybe, as the Easterner says, he's been reading too many dime novels and believes he's in the Wild West. I really hope Johnny and the Swede fight. Johnny's disliked the Swede ever since he made the assumption that just because the hotel's in the West, we read Nebraska, that must mean people have been murdered on the premises. In my opinion, the Swede should have been knocked on his ass by now. Since the cowboy's just trying to keep the peace, Scully's playing the host, and the Eastern is more neutral than Switzerland, that just leaves Johnny. I don't really watch movies or television, so I don't really have any ideas who would play the characters. Maybe Sean Connery could play Scully, and Richard Gere could play the Easterner. Sure, I'd watch that. Woosom referred to the following line. The cowboy's jaw had dropped in that expression of bovine amazement, which was one of his important mannerisms. I love it. With the last line, Scully seems at the end of his rope with trying to appease the Swede and get him to stay. Does anyone think Johnny might have actually cheated? Maybe despite the Swede, or just more of the Swede's paranoia. The Swede also has his two crazy moments while playing cards, first thinking he will be murdered, now accusing Johnny of cheating. Then, with the cards being trampled by everyone, you could probably give them some deeper meaning and symbolism, though exactly what, I'm not sure yet. Gravel on Mud said, I loved that line about the bovine amazement being one of his important mannerisms. Super funny. I think that Johnny pissed off the farmer during cards too, so maybe he is cheating. Did the farmer ever come back? I also think that there's some symbolism with the cards, but I can't work it out. It could be a case that the scrambling of the cards is to scramble the truth. Like, we'll never know if Johnny cheated or not, right? Laura Weiss-Titch said, the Swede, the Dutchman, is crazy. He's been stirring trouble since the start, and everyone has been trying to keep the peace until now. Maybe he wanted to fight. Sorry, maybe he wanted to cause a fight all along. Yeah, you got that feeling, don't you? He's trying to stir things up. Well, I did get that feeling initially, and then his actions made me think, no, he was just like a bit deranged. Kind of went a bit back and forth on, yeah, on that. But definitely in the first couple of chapters, I thought this guy is a troublemaker. Like, he's intentionally trying to stir these people up, to get a rise out of them. I need to see this fist fight go down. I'm ready to read on. So, here we go. This is chapter 6 of The Blue Hotel by Stephen Crane. The men prepared to go outdoors. The Easterner was so nervous that he had great difficulty in getting his arms into the sleeves of his new leather coat. As the cowboy drew his fur cap down over his ears, his hands trembled. In fact, Johnny and old Scully were the only ones who displayed no agitation. These preliminaries were conducted without words. Scully threw open the door. "Well, come on," he said. Instantly, a terrific wind caused the flame of the lamp to struggle at its wick, while a puff of black smoke sprang from the chimney top. The stove was in mid-current of the blast, and its voice swelled to equal the roar of the storm. Some of the scarred and bedabbled cards were caught up from the floor and dashed helplessly against the farther wall. The men lowered their heads and plunged into the tempest as into a sea. No snow was falling, but great whirls and clouds of flakes swept up from the ground by the frantic winds were streaming southward with the speed of bullets. The covered land was blue with the sheen of an unearthly satin, and there was no other hue save where at the low, black railway station, which seemed incredibly distant, one light gleamed like a tiny jewel. As the men floundered into a thigh-deep drift, it was known that the Swede was bawling out something. Scully went to him, put a hand on his shoulder and projected an ear. "What's that you say?" he shouted. "I say," bawled the Swede again, "I won't stand much show against this gang. I know you'll all pitch on me." Scully smote him reproachfully on the arm. "Tut, man," he yelled. The wind tore the words from Scully's lips and scattered them far alee. "You are all a gang of—" boomed the Swede, but the storm also seized the remainder of this sentence. Immediately turning their backs upon the wind, the men had swung around a corner to the sheltered side of the hotel. It was the function of the little house to preserve here, amid this great devastation of snow, an irregular V-shape of heavily encrusted grass, which crackled beneath the feet. One could imagine the great drifts piled against the windward side. When the party reached the comparative peace of this spot, it was found that the Swede was still bellowing. "Oh, I know what kind of a thing this is. I know you'll all pitch on me. I can't lick you all." Scully turned upon him, panther fashion. "You'll not have to whip all of us. You'll have to whip my son Johnny, and the man what troubles you during that time will have me to deal with." The arrangements were swiftly made. The two men faced each other, obedient to the harsh commands of Scully, whose face, in the subtly luminous gloom, could be seen set in the austere, impersonal lines that are pictured on the countenances of the Roman veterans. The Easterner's teeth were chattering, and he was hopping up and down like a mechanical toy. The cowboy stood rock-like. The contestants had not stripped off any clothing. Each was in his ordinary attire. Their fists were up, and they eyed each other in a calm that had the elements of leonine cruelty in it. During this pause, the Easterner's mind, like a film, took lasting impressions of three men. The iron-nerved master of the ceremony, the Swede, pale, motionless, terrible, and Johnny, serene yet ferocious, brutish yet heroic. The entire prelude had in it a tragedy greater than the tragedy of action, and this aspect was accentuated by the long, mellow cry of the blizzard, as it sped the trembling and wailing flakes into the black abyss of the south. "Now," said Scully. The two combatants leaped forward and crashed together like bullocks. There was heard the cushioned sound of blows, and of a curse squeezing out from between the tight teeth of one. As for the spectators, the Easterner's pent-up breath exploded from him with a pop of relief, absolute relief, from the tension of the preliminaries. The cowboy bounded into the air with a yowl. Scully was immovable as from supreme amazement and fear at the fury of the fight which he himself had permitted and arranged. For a time, the encounter in the darkness was such a perplexity of flying arms that it presented no more detail than would a swiftly revolving wheel. Occasionally a face, as if illuminated by a flash of light, would shine out, ghastly and marked with pink spots. A moment later, the men might have been known as shadows, if it were not for the involuntary utterance of oaths that came from them in whispers. Suddenly, a holocaust of warlike desire caught the cowboy, and he bolted forward with the speed of a bronco. "Go it, Johnny! Go it! Kill him! Kill him!" Scully confronted him. "Keep back," he said, and by his glance the cowboy could tell that this man was Johnny's father. To the Easterner there was a monotony of unchangeable fighting. That was an abomination. This confused mingling was eternal to his sense, which was contracted in a longing for the end. The priceless end. Once the fighters lurched near him, and as he scrambled hastily backward, he heard them breathe like men on the rack. "Kill him, Johnny, kill him, kill him, kill him." The cowboy's face was contorted like one of those agony masks in museums. "Keep still," said Scully icily. Then there was a sudden loud grunt, incomplete, cut short, and Johnny's body swung away from the Swede and fell with sickening heaviness to the grass. The cowboy was barely in time to prevent the mad Swede from flinging himself upon his prone adversary. "No, you don't," said the cowboy, interposing an arm. "Wait a second." Scully was at his son's side. "Johnny, Johnny, me boy." His voice had a quality of melancholy tenderness. "Johnny, can you go on with it?" He looked anxiously down into the bloody, pulpy face of his son. There was a moment of silence, and then Johnny answered in his ordinary voice, Yes. Assisted by his father, he struggled to his feet. "Wait a bit now till you get your wind," said the old man. A few paces away, the cowboy was lecturing the Swede. "No, you don't. Wait a second." The Easterner was plucking at Scully's sleeve. "Oh, this is enough," he pleaded. "This is enough. Let it go as it stands. This is enough." "Bill," said Scully, "get out of the road." The cowboy stepped aside. "Now." The combatants were actuated by a new caution as they advanced towards collision. They glared at each other, and then the Swede aimed a lightning blow that carried with it his entire weight. Johnny was evidently half stupid from weakness, but he miraculously dodged, and his fist sent the overbalanced Swede sprawling. The cowboy, Scully, and the Easterner burst into a cheer that was like a chorus of triumphant soldiery. But before its conclusion, the Swede had scuffled agilely to his feet and come in berserk abandon at his foe. There was another perplexity of flying arms, and Johnny's body again swung away and fell, even as a bundle might fall from a roof. The Swede instantly staggered to a little wind-waved tree and leaned upon it, breathing like an engine, while his savage and flame-lit eyes roared from face to face as the men bent over Johnny. There was a splendour of isolation in his situation at this time which the Easterner felt once when, lifting his eyes from the man on the ground, he beheld that mysterious and lonely figure waiting. "Are you any good yet, Johnny?" asked Scully in a broken voice. The son gasped and opened his eyes languidly. After a moment he answered, "No, I ain't any good any more." Then from shame and bodily ill he began to weep, the tears furrowing down through the blood stains on his face. "He was too heavy for me." Scully straightened and addressed the waiting figure. "Stranger," he said evenly, "it's all up with our side." Then his voice changed into that vibrant huskiness, which is commonly the tone of the most simple and deadly announcement. "Johnny is whipped." Without replying, the victor moved off on the route to the front door of the hotel. The cowboy was formulating new and unspellable blasphemies. The Easterner was startled to find that they were out in a wind that seemed to come direct from the shadowed Arctic floes. He heard again the wail of the snow as it was flung to its grave in the south. He knew now that all this time the cold had been sinking into him deeper and deeper, and he wondered that he had not perished. He felt indifferent to the condition of the vanquished man. "Johnny, can you walk?" asked Scully. "Did I hurt him any?" asked the son. "Can you walk, boy? Can you walk?" Johnny's voice was suddenly strong. There was a robust impatience in it. "I asked you whether I hurt him any." "Yes, yes, Johnny," answered the cowboy, consolingly. "He's hurt a good deal." They raised him from the ground, and as soon as he was on his feet, he went tottering off, rebuffing all attempts at assistance. When the party rounded the corner, they were fairly blinded by the pelting of the snow. It burned their faces like fire. The cowboy carried Johnny through the drift to the door. As they entered, some cards again rose from the floor and beat against the wall. The Easterner rushed to the stove. He was so profoundly chilled that he almost dared to embrace the glowing iron. The Swede was not in the room. Johnny sank into a chair and, folding his arms on his knees, buried his face in them. Scully, warming one foot and then the other at the rim of the stove, muttered to himself with Celtic mournfulness. The cowboy had removed his fur cap, and with a dazed and rueful air, he was running one hand through his tousled locks. From overhead they could hear the creaking of boards as the Swede tramped here and there in his room. The sad quiet was broken by the sudden flinging open of a door that led towards the kitchen. It was instantly followed by an inrush of women. They precipitated themselves upon Johnny amid a chorus of lamentation before they carried their prey off to the kitchen, there to be bathed and harangued with that mixture of sympathy and abuse which is a feat of their sex. The mother straightened herself and fixed old Scully with an eye of stern reproach. "Shame be upon you, Patrick Scully," she cried. "Your own son, too. Shame be upon you." "There now, be quiet now," said the old man weakly. "Shame be upon you, Patrick Scully." The girls, rallying to this slogan, sniffed disdainfully in the direction of those trembling accomplices, the cowboy and the Easterner. Presently they bore Johnny away and left the three men to dismal reflection. All right, there we go, another chapter down. That was awesome. Fight, fight, fight. I felt like I was back in primary school or high school, cheering on a punch-on. Very exciting stuff. That was really fun to read. Poor old Johnny, hey? All right, so have your say about this chapter on the subreddit, reddit.com/r/thehemingwaylist. I will drop a few story prompts, discussion prompts, into the forum, and I'd love to hear what you all thought about this chapter. That's going to do us for today. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.